Register Radio is sponsored by Ignatius Press, the premier publisher of outstanding Catholic books, magazines, videos, and music, faithful to the magisterium of the Church. On the web at ignatius.com.
From the National Catholic Register, this is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
This week on Register Radio, Jeanette DiMello talks with Register correspondent Justin Bell about the self-giving response of the people of Boston after the bombings, and how the city is indeed moving forward. That is certainly good news. In the second half of our program, Jeanette talks with Catholic commentator Teresa Tomeo about her recent trip to Rome, where she covered the International Adult Stem Cell Conference at the Vatican. Welcome again to Register Radio. It's a co-production of EWTN and the National Catholic Register. I'm Tom Price, along with Jeanette DiMello, editor-in-chief of the Register. Hi, Jeanette.
Hello, Tom.
Our first guest today, Justin Bell, the Register's correspondent based in Boston. Justin has a Master of Arts in Visual Media Arts. He has been a correspondent for the Register since 2007, when he reported on progress in peace efforts from Northern Ireland. Justin now lives in Boston, where he has written for Columbia Magazine and the Boston Pilot. Originally from Denver, Justin's works have also appeared in the Denver Catholic Register and the Fort Collins Coloradoan. Recently, Justin has captured for the Register the tragic events in Boston following the Boston Marathon bombing. And today, he'll talk with us about the courage and resilience of the people of Boston as they indeed try to move forward. Justin, welcome to Register Radio.
Nice to talk with you this morning.
Justin, you've had an intense couple of weeks there in Boston. It's been 1 week since the living suspect of the Boston Marathon bombing was apprehended by law enforcement officers. I imagine that moment brought an audible sigh of relief around the city of Boston and the rest of the area. Can you describe that moment for Bostonians?
Thank you, Jeanette. And sure, before I get to that moment, I just have to say that whole day starting on Thursday evening was, a lot of people compared it to watching a show like 24. The whole day was tense. I mean, we woke up, most people heard helicopters outside. A lot of people the night before had tragically heard of the death of Officer Sean Collier. So most of the area was on a thing called a shelter and carry order, where they're to stay in their homes. Where I live in Somerville, Massachusetts, we weren't under that order. So later in the afternoon, I was able to kind of get out of the area and take a break. I actually drove up to Concord, which is about a half an hour away from Boston. And there was a press conference around 6:45 local time, where they had announced that they're going to lift the shelter and stay order in Watertown, where the gunfight had ensued. And about 20 minutes later, there was the news that they had found someone was hiding out in that boat, which turned out to be Johar Tsarnaev. And so, it kind of became really intense watching that situation. I think a lot of people thought he wasn't going to get out of there alive. On Facebook, there were people throughout the day kind of posting different things. And one thing I put in one of the articles I wrote was that Father John Wykes, he wrote something on Facebook where he told about how he just prayed another Divine Mercy chaplet for Johar. And he addressed him directly, and he said, these choices have gotten you nowhere. Turn yourself in. And then 12 minutes later, he was taken in custody. So after that moment, I think there was a big sigh of relief around the area, because, a lot of people think he was going to be, out of the area. There's a bomber on the loose. It is a tense situation. So there was relief, and there was the celebrations that came out earlier. But at the same time, there was a sober fact that, people had died. And, it's a lot of mixed emotions there.
And you mentioned Father John Wyke's response, and there was a very large response from the faith community there in Boston, and of course around the country and even around the world. Tell us a little bit about the faith response to this situation here in Boston.
Sure, yeah. Earlier in the week, before that Friday, on Thursday, they had the interfaith gathering, and I was able to go to this, and really an amazing scene in a lot of different ways. First of all, the people who attended, the members of the public, lined up as early as 5:20 in the morning to get there. It was heavy security. I had found out from one of the bishops here locally that the governor had asked Cardinal O'Malley, basically permission. He asked to use the Holy Cross Cathedral. It seats a lot of people, that cathedral in the south end of Boston. So at this gathering, you had civic and religious leaders there, a lot of speakers, and it was an interesting blend of kind of religious imagery, but also civic pride and that type of thing. To me, one of the most striking moments actually was from long-term mayor of Boston, the mayor of Boston, Thomas Menino. He's in a wheelchair. He had checked himself out of the hospital earlier in the week, and his son rolled him over to the podium. And he stood up in a dramatic fashion, and he gave this address. And he mentioned that we love the fathers and the brothers who took shirts off their back to stop the bleeding, the mothers and the sisters who cared for the injured. That was really just a pivotal moment to me. But in regards to the faith community, definitely Cardinal Sean has been a leader in that regard.
Sure.
At this interfaith gathering, he did talk about the culture of death, to overcoming that by promoting a culture of life, a profound respect for each and every human being made in the image and likeness of God. And then two other things in regards to the faith community. On Saturday, there was a Eucharistic procession that took place in the north end of Boston. And this is part of the Eucharistic Congress that has gone on for the last 5 years. Now, I'm one of the guys who helped plan the whole weekend. I'm on the leadership team or whatever. But they didn't know when the suspect was on the loose if that was going to go on.
Sure.
So they canceled the Friday evening's program, but with him in custody, they went forward with the Mass and the Eucharistic procession. And just to be part of that, it was awesome because it was just able to bring our Lord and the Eucharist through those streets of the North End. And I think there's candles and people were giving out rosaries and the signs of prayer for Boston. I think it just brought a lot of peace to the situation.
Sure. And this was on April 20th, Saturday, April 20th.
That's right, yeah. I mean, we didn't know if the city would still be under lockdown over the weekend.
Sure. What a beautiful witness to have the Eucharist go through the streets and just to just show that sign of strength and support and that Christ is with you. This is Jeanette DeMello with Register Radio. I'm speaking with Register correspondent Justin Bell in Boston. Now, Justin, tell me, how is the city moving forward now? What are the noticeable signs that the terror has passed?
Sure. There's a lot of different levels on that. There were some big milestones in Boston that you can kind of hang your hat on, so to speak. One of those are Red Sox games. They had a Red Sox game on Saturday that went plays, and people spoke, and they had the flag and that type of thing. And just the weather's been good, and people are out and about, and I think they wanted to move on. But at the same time, there are some people that really were instrumental, and I'm going from a Globe article here that they wrote a couple articles about the people who took care of Boylston Street. Boylston Street are where the two explosions happened, right in the central part of Boston, in a place called the Back Bay. So what you had to have is cleaning crews go out there on Tuesday and Wednesday. Actually, I think it was Tuesday. And they're cleaning up the streets. They're cleaning up the blood that they wanted to get out of there. And, I'm just looking from a quote from this article where this fellow, Mr. Hughes, is saying, that's our job, to make it as clean as it should be, so people walking by can't tell
sure.
what's there.
Now, are people able to go to that area now?
They are. And the businesses are open. So you have restaurant owners that, they brought their crews back. They had to come back to their restaurants. It was a moment frozen in time because when those bombs went off, people were evacuating, and they just scattered the area. So when the restaurant owners and workers came back, they're throwing away spoiled food. They're cleaning up their restaurants, getting ready to move forward. So a lot of hard work, but, I think people definitely are moving forward,
And has there been, I'm sure there's increased security at other larger events and things like that. Do people feel safe now?
I haven't been to that area since last week. I was there the day after the bombings, and definitely the security was intense. To get to one of the Catholic chapel in the mall right next to the marathon route, at least on one street, people were the security forces were checking IDs and so forth. There was a funeral or a memorial service for Officer Sean Collier a couple days ago, and it drew about 15,000 law enforcement as far away as, like, Canadian Mounties were there.
No, this is the MIT officer who was shot Thursday.
That's right. Yeah, Sean Collier is 27 years old, and they had a memorial service on the campus of MIT, but that was closed to the public. But from reading about it, there were snipers on a roof, heavy security, no backpacks,
sure.
That type of thing. So definitely big-time security.
This is Jeanette DeMello with Register Radio. I'm speaking with Register correspondent Justin Bell in Boston. Now, Justin, tell me a little bit about the recovery for the victims who were lost limbs and other types of injuries from the bombing.
That's right. The number right now of people injured that's going to the hospital is about 260. That went up from the initial reports because people had experienced hearing loss. Those are some of the things that kind of come up later that were close by. But in regards to the people who lost limbs, again, going from the Globe article from yesterday, the count there was that there were 14 people who have who had immediate almost amputations that evening, and that's including people who had double amputations. And then later on, there were some other people who had amputations after conversations with their doctors because they realized that, you know, there was a choice whether or not to have an amputation now and move forward with that disability, or, you know, there's a quote here where someone saying you could be working on something where you can't walk on it, you're tripping on, and there's two efforts of a rehab, and they're addicted to the pain-killing medications that they're on. So these patients have to face a difficult choice whether or not to keep their limbs. But in particularly, there was a great story about a woman by the name of Celeste Cochran. And she lost, I think, at least one leg. And there were the two Marines that went around to the area hospitals visiting people who had lost limbs. And these Marines, between the two of them, had lost three legs and part of their hand in Afghanistan. So they were able to kind of minister to these recent amputees and talk to them, hey, you're going to be able to make it, and you're going to be able to be stronger and more independent than you ever had. So that was just a beautiful story of people who had been in a tragic incident and helping to help the others. In the
sure. And I think you also mentioned to me Adrienne Haslett. I believe she was a dancer who lost a limb, I think a foot, her left foot, and she really had a beautiful story. Tell us in just these last minutes, what was Adrienne's story?
Sure. I just saw this last night, and it was just a gripping video that the BBC posted. It's only about 2 minutes. But Adrienne was down there in the area, and she recalls the bomb going off, and she recalls that seeing part of her foot was missing. So she was calling out to rescue personnel. You know, she was basically repeating over and over, I'm a ballroom dancer, help me, you know. And the interview on this video took place in the hospital where definitely she had to have an amputation. Really courageous, I think, for her to speak on that. But and they show the picture of her dancing in this video and just a beautiful young woman. But she's determined to dance again, and she actually wants to be in the marathon next year. So there's a lot of tales of courage and just people moving forward with their new situation. But at the same time, there's not a time frame, you know, for these type of injuries. I couldn't even imagine. So it is inspiring and everything like that, but we certainly have to keep them in our prayers after the regular news cycle.
Well, Justin, thank you so much for being with us today, and we most certainly will continue to pray for all of those in Boston during this time.
Oh, thank you, Jeanette, and, you know, great to talk with you today, and have a wonderful day.
Thank you so much, Justin. When we return, we'll have the latest news about adult stem cell research. This is Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Stay with us.
Hello, I'm Michael Warsaw, Chief Executive of EWTN and publisher of the National Catholic Register. We're in a time in history like no other, and our fight for religious freedom and the need for the new evangelization, it's essential to stay connected via the faithful Catholic content delivered by the Register. We've finally been able to help realize Mother Angelica's dream. She always wanted a newspaper as part of EWTN's media apostolate. Why? Because there's an important catechetical opportunity at the intersection of faith and culture. Since the 1920s, the Register has been advancing the truth of the Magisterium. This valuable resource will help you to better understand the faith and deepen your relationship with our Lord. Join the growing ranks of Register subscribers today. and access the one source of leading voices and opinions concerning the issues that matter most to you.
To start your subscription to the National Catholic Register today, go to EWTN.com and click on the banner for the Register or call 800-854-6316. That's EWTN.com and click on the Register subscription banner or call 800-854-6316.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
And welcome back. Along with Jeanette DiMello, I'm Tom Price. Our friend Teresa Tomeo has more than 30 years' experience in television, radio, and newspaper journalism. Her weekday morning radio program, Catholic Connection, is produced by Ave Maria Radio and now heard on over 200 Catholic radio stations nationwide through EWTN. She's also co-host of The Catholic View for Women on EWTN television. Teresa was recently in Rome covering the second annual Vatican Conference on Adult Stem Cell Research. We're delighted to have her with us. T, welcome to Register Radio.
Hey, Tom. Good to talk to you again. Good to be here.
And you, my friend.
Thanks so much for being with us today.
You're welcome.
So you were in Rome not too long ago, attending the Vatican Conference on Adult Stem Cell Research. I think that was April 11th through the 13th.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like, to me, that sounds like a very technical conference. Tell us about this conference and who was there.
Well, it was technical, but also it was very spiritual, which I found really interesting. And it started off with Cardinal Ravasi, who's the head of the Pontifical Council for Culture, and he really set the whole tone for the weekend. The conference was entitled Regenerative Medicine, A Fundamental Shift in Science and Culture. And I really thought, as I mentioned in the commentary piece that you posted yesterday on National Catholic Register's website, I really felt it was brilliant on the part of the Church to organize this conference and co-sponsor it along with the STEM for Life Foundation, because the Church is saying this is a huge effort in medicine that could change the course of medicine. But it always deals with the dignity of the human person whenever you're talking about these life-changing types of treatments, of course, with adult stem cell research. And so the Church wants to be in the middle of this conversation. And I think having it at the Vatican makes a huge statement. Now, many people were there, including bioethicists and medical doctors and scientists and really the best of the best, Jeanette, from the science world that are looking at this area of adult stem cell research. So it was just fascinating to be there.
Great. And also, it sounds like sometimes people listen to this idea of stem cell research and they say, but the Church doesn't support that. What is a conference on stem cell research doing at the Vatican, a Vatican conference on this very topic that we sometimes think, oh, the Church doesn't support? What? Tell us what the false idea is about stem cell research.
Well, unfortunately, the culture of death was in early on this discussion of stem cell research. Of course, they were pushing primarily years ago embryonic stem cell research, which involves the destruction of a human life, of a human embryo, in order to take advantage of the components of those cells to use for research. And, of course, the Church is totally against that. But the Church is not against science. The Church is pro-science, but more importantly, pro-person, as Cardinal Ravasi said. And so the Church has always supported ethical research. And the interesting thing is we're seeing now, and this is why these scientists came here, the only thing that works, not that it would matter according to the Church, even if embryonic stem cell research did work and was effective, but what's working is our body's ability to heal itself. And this is in adult stem cell research. All the success stories in the mm-hmm. clinical trials are coming from this area. Not one person since this type of research began not too long ago has been helped through embryonic stem cell research. So I also found that fascinating from a spiritual perspective. It was a very scientific conference, as you mentioned, but at the same time, it was very spiritual because the Church is saying there are things we can do, and the Church needs to be involved. I mean, people complain all the time, oh, so-and-so bishop doesn't do this, or Church doesn't do enough. Well, here's the Church bringing together the top experts in this field and saying, let's talk about this, but let's talk about it from an ethical and moral perspective.
This is Jeanette DiMello with Register Radio. I'm speaking with Teresa Tomeo about stem cell research. Now, Teresa, tell us a little bit more about the types of cures that are possible through adult stem cell research.
Well, the list is very long, Jeanette, and there were actually several people who gave their own testimonies there at the conference, including a young woman who was struggling with MS, and she had such a very, very limited activity in her life as a young woman who wanted to go to college and be active and exercise and be with her friends. She was pretty much, for the most part, bedridden because the condition of MS was pretty much taking over her life. And she had a transplant from her own cells, adult stem cells, and her condition has been pretty much completely reversed. And so we're looking at MS. There's another young woman there who had an issue with a bone disease. And the bone disease basically causes her bones to be very, very fragile, where when she was born, when she came out of her mother's womb, several of her bones were broken just by the process of being born. And with her transplant from her father's adult stem cells, she was able to strengthen her own bones. She grew 6 inches, and she hasn't been completely cured of this ailment, but she now is much, much stronger than she was when she was born. She's about 14 years old, and she gave a story. There was a beautiful video of her, and she talked about the fact of how adult stem cells are working in her life, and her parents also testified. So that's just two examples. They also looked at other areas of organ growth and organ replacement. There were testimonies about how valves can be grown for the heart from people's own cells. There was also the story, Meredith Vieira was one of the MCs, and she's going to be doing a story later this year on NBC News about a young woman who had a tracheotomy, who has problems with her trachea, and they're actually regrowing the organ in a lab from her own stem cells. So there was all kinds of testimony, but what's so interesting is that this seems like it has never-ending possibilities, and that's another reason why the church says they need to be involved, because even though right now this is very ethical, you can see that this has the potential of being somewhat like a science fiction movie or a novel, so you still have to be very careful. But several different testimonies from different people who are there attending who've had cures or at least great improvements in their lifestyle because of adult stem cell research.
Well, it really does sound very promising. And this is Jeanette DeMello with Register Radio. I'm speaking with Teresa Tamio about stem cell research. As you mentioned, though, there's also many dangers in this kind of research or in science in general. You know, we hear about cloning, embryonic stem cell research, the use of illicit biological materials in this research.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure some of these scientists have been involved in unethical type of research. How does the Vatican Conference reconcile this mix of scientists, some who are practicing in an ethical way, others who may not be?
Well, I think that's a great point, and that's a great question that came up in many of the discussions. And I think that what the church does is the church is recognizing that, frankly, the people who are in this industry, who are the top in medical science, are not all Catholic. Most of them are either atheists or agnostic, and they're not coming at it from a religious perspective. They're scientists. They're problem solvers. But what the church does is invite them, again, into our house, into the Catholic Church, so they can talk to these scientists who are involved in this research about the ethics behind it. It's interesting because I spent a lot of time chatting with Father Ostriaco, who's a moral ethicist. He's a molecular biologist. He's a professor at Providence College, and he gave a talk actually on bioethics. And what he was saying is in an interview that I did with him after his segment, after he spoke, is that, you know, the whole idea is this is really part of the new evangelization. So it would be great if all these scientists were Catholic, but if you want to have a discussion and you want to be involved in the discussion on the latest and greatest research in this area, you're going to have to meet with these people who may not agree with you, but this gives you the opportunity to witness to them and to give the church's perspective. And what was so beautiful to me is that walking around listening to the conversations and talking to some of the doctors who were Catholic, what they were telling me is that some of these other scientists and medical experts have really never heard a moral approach to their work. And now they're sitting there in the Vatican hearing about moral ethics and how it should apply and why we don't want to go in this particular direction, let's say, in using some of the embryo cells or some of the other things you mentioned. So what the church is doing is really reaching out and bringing these people into their house, into our house, and saying, you know, we are not going to weaken our teachings. We are going to be very clear with this. This is what we believe. This is a truth revealed by God, the dignity of the human person. And we understand that you might not be there yet, but you need to look at this, and here's why. So, I thought it was very brilliant because we're only going to reach them if we can talk to them. It's just like witnessing. You can talk to people all the time who aren't Catholic, you know?
I agree, and that's something that you do talk about in your ncregister.com column, The Church and Science, The Right Place at the Right Time.
Mm-hmm.
We'll have that up on the Register's website. And in the last 30 seconds, tell us how people can find out more information about adult stem cell research.
I think probably the best place to go would be to the Stem for Life Foundation website, which is stemforlife.org, and they also have a whole host of information on that website about the actual conference that took place in the middle of April, which again was Regenerative Medicine, A Fundamental Shift in Science and Culture. I think I would take a look at that, and I would also go to the Vatican website for the Pontifical Council for the Culture. You can just do a quick search and go to Vatican VA and find it that way, but you can also just put in Pontifical Council for Culture, and they have a whole lots of information on their homepage as well on the conference and on stem cell research. But stemforlife.org probably the best place.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Teresa, for being with us today.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Hey, Teresa, really appreciate it, and we'll look forward to hearing you as normal Monday morning on Catholic Connection.
Okay, my friend. God bless. Have a great weekend.
Thank you. Don't forget, you can listen to this show again by going to ncregister.com. Be sure to look for the microphone to listen to or download the show. Thanks again for joining us this time on Register Radio. For all of us at the Register and here at EWTN, I'm Tom Price. See you next week.
For more information about the National Catholic Register and about Register Radio, go to ncregister.com. Podcasts of Register Radio are posted on ncregister.com and on ewtn.com. Join us next week at this time for Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Register Radio is sponsored by Ignatius Press, the premier publisher of outstanding Catholic books, magazines, videos, and music, faithful to the magisterium of the Church. On the web at ignatius.com.